Right now, it's time for Oh, the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship events and research on campus. And for that, as always, we are joined by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is the website there. Max, thanks for being with us today. How are you?
It is always a pleasure. It's a tradition. Monday afternoon, here I am.
Absolutely.
You can't seem to chase me away.
Try though I might. I'm going to have to try harder.
You had forgotten one thing. You were mentioning players, Tar Heels, that were signed over the weekend. Mm-hmm. There was one other. Max Orr was signed to a futures contract to the Patriots as a quarterback.
That's good.
Because they wanted an older quarterback who is more
to mentor Tom Brady as he launches his career. Yeah.
It'll be busy for me this fall, but I promise I'll be here every Monday because, you know, after the Sunday, Monday morning quarterbacking, I suppose. As always, Aaron, you might not believe that, but you will believe what I'm going to tell you. I bring three things related to today's date, April 29th. And the first two are that in 1429, Joan of Arc arrived at Orléans, the Maid of Orléans, and sent there by God, if we believe this, and of course has become the patron saint of so many in France. And
where
of course,
was she before Orléans?
Talking to God.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. My expertise in French history picks up around 1700 or so. I do
the
know
the town where she was born is still upset that Orléans got all the publicity.
Yes, exactly. Well, then they have a wonderful gold statue of her in Paris, so everybody should be happy. Also, in 1967, on April 29th, sort of similar, Muhammad Ali's title was revoked because he refused to sign up for selective service, and his title not. Of course, took several years for him to get his title back and for the absolution and whatnot. Muhammad Ali and Joan of Arc, I just put them together. April 29th.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
We recognize them both as heroes, but I think Joan of Arc would probably have been 100% fine with revoking Muhammad Ali's heavyweight title. And there we might diverge from Joan of Arc.
Likely, they have about 500 years difference, so they never had to really have this conversation,
right.
You know. And finally, it's William Randolph Hearst's birthday in 1863. So there are many things to say about William Randolph Hearst. That I'm probably just not going to say.
Okay, that's fine.
But, you know, he's the most important. Our guest today helped me pick out that person as a good person. And our guest today, we brought someone with us, unlike last week, is Robin Schrader. She heads up the Humanities for the Public Good Initiative. This is your second time here on Oh, the Humanities.
Repeat offender.
How are you?
And we're inviting you back because when you first came on, we were just sort of starting the Mellon Initiative, Humanities for the Public Good. And since then, we've just done a lot of things and at UNC related to this grant, and we want to get some updates and about what you've done and what's coming up. So, Robin, what have you been up to?
The mind boggles. So, I think one of the things that's very much on my mind because it happened 2 days ago is that some graduate students in my course on doing public humanities in the university ran their course project, which was a public combat veterans writing workshop and panel discussion on, they called it Popular Narratives and the Experience of War. Interesting question. The question being, well, what does it mean that we have all of these soldiers and now veterans wandering around who are carrying in their heads the exact same images we civilians all have from Top Gun and the million other movies that we've all seen that, and, you know, sort of give us an idea of war that may have little or nothing to do with the actual experience. And so my grad students, who include their array of volunteer writing center operatives, decided to sort of get in there and help more folks who are veterans to sort of tell their own stories and to cut through some of the gap maybe between
awesome.
The popular narratives. And
so
the
it was a
experience.
Writing symposium?
First, it was a panel discussion with some really awesome and somewhat prominent veterans from around the country who, one of them, Joe Kasabian, has written a book called The Hooligans of Kandahar and is now a sci-fi writer, very interesting guy. One's a woman on faculty at IU Bloomington. Just a range of people who served in different branches of the armed forces, but who also have written in scholarly and non-scholarly ways about it to sort of help the folks who are in the audience, many of whom were ROTC or veterans, but not all of them, to sort of have a way in to writing, which is something we all can do and which helps us all to make meaning, which
that's
is,
really cool.
Makes it a good humanities event.
What was the class that sparked that?
So one of the things that I do among the realm of things is I've been teaching a class for graduate students trying to help graduate students in the humanities who are mostly training to write monographs that are little read as their mm-hmm. dissertations and become researchers, to figure out how to translate those skills into public engagement, into things that are socially useful. And I have to tell you, my course prompt wasn't so much different than do something that is meaningful to you and also meaningful to a public beyond yourself. Mm-hmm. And here is a little bit of funding from the Mellon Foundation, and do what you can. And they really ran with it. Actually, they raised money from all over town and the university. I think the folks at Med Deli and some other places chipped in. They really had a lot of community support, and they really found a lot of folks and had a meaningful event. So
that's what every class should be.
That's what every class. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. It was the students are just doing interesting, exciting things.
That's really cool.
What's really promising about that is that there's this need. You know, this is not just public humanities for the sake of the scholars to transmit their work. Mm-hmm. That the best public humanities work, and there's value in that. You know, Carolina Public Humanities does a lot of that transmission type of work, but some of the best work is that dialogical work that you're doing, and what you're getting people to say, here's a community of need, veterans, and we have this humanities resource that we can use to help them, you know, adjust to civilian life, to make sense of their experiences, and to help us grow through what they can contribute. That's such a great dialogic way of thinking of public humanities.
I think it was the kind of event that I really hope all the rest of the events of the, this was the first event of the Humanities for the Public Good Symposium, which is also happening this Friday and Saturday. The public is welcome. You can find it on Humanities for the Public Good's website. But this was the first event, and it had very much the culture that we really want to have, which is exactly, we want people to feel seen. We want to say we're all members of the public. We all have some kind of contribution to our deep public debates. We want to ask really local questions about why it's so hard sometimes for people beyond the campus to work with the university. So we're doing some conversations and panel discussions on that. We want to help people who are humanists, mm-hmm. who have really important humanities knowledges, to understand how they can do what my grad students did, yeah. and make that useful. So there's a cool panel on Saturday afternoon that we've just called Organizing Culture, where it's people, we have Barbara Lowen from the Polly Murray Project, we have the good social practice artist from Culture Mill, and some other people coming in to just talk about how they do this kind of public cultural organizing and relationship building work at institutions around our wonderful area.
I think that's great. I mean, we talk about the university or like the ivory tower as being somehow separate from or distinct from the real world, right? So students are graduating from college. Oh, what are you going to do when you get out into the real world? The university is the real world, and this is exactly the sort of thing that brings it all together, right?
There's a real culture clash, I think, because on campus, I think folks, particularly in the humanities, they really believe that they're the folks who best understand sort of power and social mm-hmm. relationships and institutions, and they're sort of the most in the world. And I think there's a way in which they get treated, particularly as humanities has become so stigmatized in the last decade or so, as though they're the furthest removed, the most theoretical people. And I think one of the things we want to do is show it's not true. A guy named Daniel Fisher is coming in from the National Humanities Alliance, and he runs this great project, people can Google it, that's called Humanities for All. And what it is, it's basically a database. And what he set out to do was to figure out, like, where are people doing publicly engaged humanities work? What does it look like? Who's doing it? What are the projects like? What are the categories in which they're operating? So he's probably, I would guess, maybe the best networked person in our country mm-hmm. for doing publicly engaged humanities work. We'll talk about it. But it really helps, I think, to improve everyone's morale who cares about art and music and literature and philosophy and so on, to see just that we're just not alone in trying to make these moves.
Your point about, you know, the multiple levels of advocacy that you have to work at, because you're talking about these scholars who are reticent perhaps to get involved in public advocacy or public work, public humanities work, because the academy is not set up to value that work. And so if people are sitting there saying, you know, I've got to get my monograph published because that's what tenure expects and whatnot. So it's so many layers that you have to work with. One is to convince the public that the university is open to having, you know, and that the university is going to be there for them, but also convincing the university and departments to find ways to value this work, make it quantifiable, make it part of the tenure process, that we really need the humanities to save the humanities have to be approaching the public in a different way and have that recognized by the university.
the easiest people to get involved in this stuff, and I'm guessing Max agrees with this and knows it, but we'll see, are graduate students in the humanities.
Absolutely.
And they're younger, they're kind of, it's a whole generation of people who self-identify as being kind of woke. They live more local lives than the faculty tend to. The faculty, you know, tend to live kind of more national and international sort of lives.
It's are they listening to this right now and going, what do you mean kind of woke? I'm extremely woke.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, many of them are extremely woke.
And yes, every graduate student on campus listens to the Aaron Keck show.
Yeah,
we know
they
that.
They should,
so.
Yeah.
the angry letters that we're about to receive.
Sorry, I cut you off. We were...
No, and I think, you know, I think that there's just this deep hunger for mattering. You know, we live in this kind of moment where this politics of mattering stuff is, it just trips off the tongue. And I think we can thank Black Lives Matter as a movement for helping us to kind of see. But every time I hear people talk about this idea of feeling seen, I think that actually resonates really deeply with me right now. I think it's really hard to explain my job to people. And I think that's true of a lot of people in the public humanities who have job titles like, you know, social practice artist, like, you know, these things that are really hard to explain. And so trying to take the time to unpack the histories, the labor, and the kind of relationships that it takes to make these kinds of work that make us more knowledgeable and more able to see each other, it's all about coming to feel and be seen by each other. At least that's how I'm thinking about it right now. Yeah.
There's so many fronts that the university is working on this. You know, we have our Adams Fellows, which is so being able to, you know, and that they can also, but, you know, we'll talk some about what the HBG program that you run can provide support for graduate students who are looking to do initiatives and projects, and that the Adams Fellows is there for them. So, you know, we're doing our part to try to make this, all of it, you know, Robin and I and other people involved in the public humanities. And I think the graduate students are the ones that are seeing that and saying, oh, I can get involved in that early. Hopefully, if they get jobs at some universities, they will, if they don't have a program like it, they'll start a program like that at the university or insert themselves into what's already going on, because this public humanities business is really blowing up. I mean, you know, look at, you're talking to two people who call themselves professionals in the public humanities. I don't think that existed 25 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago. So
you couldn't say the phrase the public humanities until about 1985. So yeah. And jobs came much later.
But UNC's really been on the cutting edge of this since the beginning of the movement, but now it really is. It's blowing up everywhere, and it's so good.
Our program started in 1979. We didn't call ourselves public humanities, but yeah, absolutely. We've been doing it for a long time, and now we have Robin helping us as well. Robin, tell us about Friday and Saturday. What kind of panels do you have?
Yeah, so we have three different things going on. One is the grad summit for these wonderful, very woke graduate students who are interested in two things. One is writing dissertations that are different. Maybe it's a monograph and a podcast or and a documentary or and an exhibition. So trying to model and show some of those projects to get people excited about innovating and, you know, not just writing a 300-page dissertation with 500 footnotes.
For five people.
Four of whom will read it.
Wait, that many? I wrote my dissertation. My advisor's comment stopped at page 50. It was fantastic.
I shudder to tell you the stories about what happened with me. The idea is also to sort of spark our creativity. There's a whole bunch of forms of knowledge production that if you're just writing text, you're just not able to use. So we have really great people who've written what are called open monographs. So this woman, Charlotte Fryer, has written something called Reclaiming the University of the People, and you can read the whole thing online. It's really about the history of Black student organizing on UNC's own campus and how the spaces of like the Sonia Haynes Stone Center came into being through various sort of generations of organizing. Has a digital exhibition component.
Oh, cool.
So we'll do some of that. We'll look at a bunch of the projects that we have funded through the Humanities for the Public Good Initiative and the Project Summit in the afternoon. I'm working with the Orange County Arts Commission. Our work is trying to sort of work on a problem that local artists seem to be feeling, which is that we have some really incredible, sometimes nationally known artists who live and work here in Orange County, but often are teaching outside of Orange County and not at UNC, who have relationships with faculty at Duke or at community colleges or elsewhere. UNC, I gather from the feedback I'm hearing, is famously been kind of a little bit difficult, a little bit of a citadel to work with. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to create some more relationships. We're trying to talk to some folks, including Katie Murray, who heads the Orange County Arts Commission, about how we can build an ecosystem in which there's just stronger ties between the university and local artists. And that will culminate in the most fun event of the symposium, which is a arts reception that night at the Ackland Art Museum at 6 o'clock, featuring some local artists, including Kazi and Oliver. And I think it's just going to be good fun and also an opportunity to meet people that we don't yet know, which we all desperately need, despite our energy being low.
If you're listening out there and you want more information, the website for Humanities for the Public Good is hpg.unc.edu. Again, hpg.unc.edu. Go there, get a lot more information and the full schedule for the symposium, which is, again, going to be on Friday and Saturday. Speaking with Max Orr and Robin Schrader, I got to wrap up, but what's coming up next for Humanities for the Public Good? What's after this weekend?
We have a whole bunch of new projects to fund. We are thematically shifting from immigration-related projects, which we've done for the last 2 years, next year, to what we're calling reckonings projects. And we're looking at the sort of racial climate of Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and really of the whole region to try and find some more projects that kind of dig into these histories, that bring more people along and help us sort of see and work on, well, seeing each other, through what are often very difficult histories. So we have folks at the symposium on Saturday to talk about the Orange County Community Remembrance Coalition, to come from Historic Stagville, to talk about the multiple kind of fronts on which this work is happening, which we hope work like which we want to fund going forward.
And Carolina Public Humanities wants to be partners in a lot of that.
And already is partners in so much of what we do that it's hard to even describe. Yeah.
Exactly. And then Max,
we have one more seminar.
Things.
I think it's just about sold out, so I won't mention it. But Gerhard Weinberg is going to be talking about D-Day. He's one of our more popular speakers. That's our last event of the spring. Besides some smaller ones. But, you know, summer planning is coming up, summer events, and I'll be bringing in some guests in the upcoming weeks about some of our summer programming.
Awesome. Again, humanities.unc.edu for more on Carolina Public Humanities, including an upcoming schedule of events, summertime programs about to start up, and for more on Humanities for the Public Good, hpg.unc.edu, and you can get information there on the symposium, which is coming up this Friday and Saturday. Max Orr, Robin Schrader, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
You.